Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
The governor of Illinois finds himself under the national spotlight and under intense pressure from a White House that is determined to deploy the National Guard and other federal resources on the streets of Chicago. The war of words has grown so intense that last week President Trump went on his Truth Social platform to say that Governor Pritzker and Mayor Johnson should be jailed for failing to protect officers from Immigration and Customs Enforcement. There are only three people who know what it's like to be the governor of Illinois and know about the challenges that Governor Pritzker is facing right now. I'm Rob Hart. We get insight from former Governor Pat Quinn on this weekend's edition of At Issue.
And you were one of three people who have walked a mile in J.B. Pritzker's shoes. Of the others, one lives in Florida, one is in disrepute. So you have some truly unique insight on what has been going on and what continues to go on regarding the National Guard, the federalization of the National Guard, and the deployment of the National Guard in the city of Chicago. Based on your experience as the governor, what powers are yours and what powers are delegated to the federal government?
Well, number one, I was commander-in-chief of the Illinois National Guard for 6 years when I was governor. It's a very important responsibility. In fact, when I was governor, we deployed 3,700 National Guard members from Illinois to Afghanistan for more than a year. And 19 of those service members were killed in Afghanistan. I went there as commander-in-chief to visit them. And it's a very important duty. It's something that is sort of shared between the federal government and the state government. That's part of our United States Constitution. When our country began, states were very concerned about their rights of the people of their state. And as a result, if you look at the Constitution, the federal government doesn't have entire power over any state. Powers that aren't delimited or identified in the U.S. Constitution are retained by the states like Illinois and the people of Illinois. So that's really what the issue is today. And when I was governor of our state, I worked very closely with the federal government. It was a situation where we talked on a regular basis. When they wanted to deploy so many of our National Guard members, it was the largest deployment of the Illinois National Guard since World War II. It was one where there was lots of conversation back and forth, and sadly, that's not happening right now.
Now, there were, at the time when you were the governor, there were some calls to bring in the National Guard to fight crime in the city during especially violent stretches in Chicago. There was one such instance that I remember in 2010, where several state lawmakers were calling on you to bring the Guard in. Mm-hmm. And how did that end?
Well, I declined to deploy our National Guard for police purposes, whether in Chicago or elsewhere. The mayor at the time, Mayor Daley, was not for that. Our National Guard are really not police officers. They're people who are trained to fight wars. They're soldiers. They're citizen soldiers. They have a regular job every day, but when they're deployed, such as to Afghanistan or Iraq in my time, those are people who are fighting our foreign enemies. And I didn't think they really had the training or the duty to carry out police functions. We have a police force in Chicago and other towns across Illinois. We have the Cook County police agencies as well. And I just declined to ever use the National Guard to police the streets. And I think that was the right decision.
It was also a very different relationship between the state of Illinois and the White House at that time when you were governor, and also when your predecessor was governor and George W. Bush was the president. And of course, when you were the governor, a fellow Chicagoan was in the White House, and it was a much more congenial relationship. But now this pressure campaign that comes down not only from the White House, but also from conservative media, from social media influencers, there is just this very powerful microscope on what's happening in the city at any given time. And can that relationship that outlined by the Constitution, can that hold up under that level of 21st century scrutiny and pressure?
Well, I think the president currently has to respect the governors of our whole state of Illinois, as well as the whole country. It's very, very dangerous for one state's National Guard to come into another state's, as we are seeing here with Texas. I don't think that's healthy at all. Matter of fact, in this current court case that's going on, I was reading an amicus brief filed by retired military officers who cautioned against using our soldiers to police streets, whether it's in Illinois or anywhere in our country. Do we want Illinois National Guard to go to Oklahoma to police their streets? From time immemorial, since the beginning of our country, we don't want our soldiers being police officers in the streets. That's what happened, actually, in Boston under King George of England. He deployed their soldiers from England to police the streets of Boston. They did a lot of things that were just not right, that were against any common sense and harmful to the people. And that's one of the reasons why in our Constitution of the United States, we have specific provisions to protect the people from the military being deployed in our states as well as our civilian areas. I think this is a really important point that's being litigated right now.
And then when you were the governor, you have 50 governors of the states, and they come from different parties. They have different, they fall on different areas of the ideological spectrum. But when you were the governor of Illinois, how did all the governors get along? I mean, obviously, you know, there were attempts to get Illinois companies to move to other states. There were, everyone's kind of jockeying amongst each other. But did everybody respect those powers at that time?
I think back when I was governor for 6 years, the idea that one state National Guard would go into another state to do police activities was just unbelievable. Nobody would have ever thought of that. I had to deal with Chris Christie and some of those people. They weren't the easiest people in the world to deal with. They had great egos and so on. But there was a view that the states are part of our federal system, and we respect each other. And that's not going on right now. I was happy to see that the governor of Oklahoma, just I think today or yesterday, whatever, said that he did not believe that state National Guards from his state or other states should be coming to Chicago and Illinois. That's just not the right way to go. That's not what the federal Constitution allows. Particularly, there was a law passed in 1878, I think, it's called Posse Comitatus, that says we will not use our military for police functions. That's what we have our own state police force, our city of Chicago police force, Cook County as well. Those men and women are trained to handle their local situation. They know the local situation, and training is very important. The military officers who are retired, who just filed this amicus curiae brief, points out that the soldiers are trained for one thing. They're not trained for law enforcement in urban areas.
Let's go back to 2009. We talk about the microscope in which Illinois has been under almost now for 20 years, just because it's been at the center of national politics for various reasons. And Illinois was under that intense microscope when you came into office. That's because a former Illinois state senator had just been elected president, and Rod Blagojevich was arrested, and transcripts of his phone taps were extremely quotable, and then he was on The Apprentice, so he never really went away. And all of a sudden, you're thrust into this bright spotlight as the governor of Illinois. And I was there in Springfield on that day, a very cold day, January of 2009. And how did that help or hinder in your efforts to hit the ground running and be your own man as the governor, because you're at the center of this national storm.
Well, no doubt about it. Everywhere you went, people knew about Illinois and knew about Blagojevich and his antics. It was the 29th of January when he was convicted by the Senate after his impeachment, after his arrest. Later, he went to jail for corruption. He was convicted by a jury. So I had to clean up state government. That was number one. Our integrity of state government had to have stronger ethics laws that were enforced. We had to reform campaign finance and freedom of information and a variety of other things that Blagojevich did wrong. And we did that. And then we also, unfortunately, had the Great Recession, where so many people were losing their jobs, their businesses, their homes, their hope. And you had to rescue our economy. And we did that, too. And most importantly, I think we had to deal with the state budget. We couldn't let the bad behavior of Blagojevich ruin the situation for kids to be educated, for our police to have proper resources, to have decent health care for everybody. So I had to work on the budget. And those three crises, restoring integrity, getting the state out of the economic morass we were in, as well as rescuing the state budget, those were three things I had to work on for 6 years, and I did.
You're listening to At Issue on WBBM News Radio. We're talking with former Illinois Governor Pat Quinn. And here's a question I've always wanted to ask you, and that was, I remember distinctly the day when Rod Blagojevich was arrested. I was working at a different radio station in town. I spent the morning at the, remember the Republic window strike in Chicago?
Sure.
I came back to the radio station, and somebody called in and said, I live across the street from Governor Blagojevich's house, and the FBI is here. And they said, get in the car. You're going up to you're going up to Ravenswood. So at what point in this whole saga did you have to prepare yourself for the idea that I'm going to be the governor within a couple of weeks or even a month?
Well, number one, it was 6:45 a.m. when my phone rang, a cell phone next to my bed. It woke me up, and it was the Associated Press. And the reporter said, the governor's been arrested. You got any comments? And my life changed then and forever, I guess. You know, keep in mind, Blagojevich didn't leave. He resisted leaving. It was recommended, and he probably should have resigned. And he maybe wouldn't have had a severe punishment that he got. But he didn't want to leave, and he was uncooperative with any kind of transition. He had to sort of get ready for whenever there would be first the impeachment vote in the House and then the conviction, a unanimous conviction of 59 senators of Blagojevich in the Senate. And once that was over, I got sworn in right away. And, you know, keep in mind, we had the recession, we had the budget crisis, and our ethics needed greatly improved for the state. But I did all that. You know, we talked a little bit earlier about Commander-in-Chief of the National Guard. I had done a lot with the National Guard when I was Lieutenant Governor, and we passed a law called the Illinois Military Family Relief Trust Fund, because at that time we were in two wars, in Iraq and Afghanistan. And a lot of our service members who are in the reserves or guard, they're citizen soldiers. They gave up their civilian job.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah, you're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
To get much lower pay in the military. And they were in Iraq and Afghanistan and elsewhere. So I worked with those men and women. We passed this law to give them financial assistance. And Tammy Duckworth, for example, is one of those who got that financial assistance when she was wounded. And so as governor, I knew that you could count on the people of Illinois, good and true, to stand straight and straighten out things that Blagojevich had screwed up and harmed our state government. And that's what happened.
On the subject of cleaning up the state's various ethics issues that were in place at the time and to address the economic woes that were swallowing the country, mm-hmm. not just the state of Illinois, and blowing a hole in municipal and civic budgets from sea to shining sea. In order to address that in Illinois, you had to go through the Speaker of the House, Michael J. Madigan. There's a lot of the myth of Madigan is you can find it anywhere in anybody who covers state politics. But for you as the governor, what was the reality? How did he run the House, and how did that affect the way that you approached getting legislation through?
It was very difficult. I had known Mike Madigan since the 70s. Matter of fact, I led a petition drive where we got a state law passed ending the practice of legislators, including Madigan, taking their entire salary for a whole year on the first day of office. We said no advance pay for politicians. They should be paid after they work. And we got a law passed against that. Matter of fact, I was in the gallery of the House back in the 70s, and he was presiding. And somebody spotted me in the gallery and pointed me out, and the legislature stood up and booed me for 3 minutes, standing boovation, led by Mike Madigan, who said I wasn't worthy of being called an Irishman. So we had a long history. Once Blagojevich was convicted, he had to work for the common good of Illinois. I would say it was difficult. Mike Madigan is not always an easy guy to work with, and I disagreed with him, for example, on utility matters. I vetoed twice as governor bills that ComEd wanted passed. They wanted a formula that would give them automatic rate increases. Madigan was for that. I vetoed it. He overrode the veto. And lo to find out, after I was governor and for I guess 8 or 9 years, there was a bribery scandal going on where ComEd, by its own admission as a company, admitted that they were involved in bribing the legislature. And that's what's led to Madigan having to go to jail. Those kind of things had to be straightened out. And that's one of the reasons I think I was governor, to stand up for the common good and the public interest and not roll over.
What were your thoughts the day he was convicted back in February?
I was disappointed. I'm never happy about anybody going to jail or being convicted of a crime. I think that's a sad day for them and for our state or our country. But justice had to be served. And that was true for Blagojevich, who got convicted of felonies, in the same way with Mike Madigan. He's going to be, I believe, going to jail this coming week. That it should be a lesson to all the members of the legislature, as well as anybody elected to public office. I happen to favor, and I tried to get this done when I was governor, and Madigan was not for it. We need an ethics initiative in Illinois. A number of states around the country have provisions in their constitution that allow voters by petition and referendum to pass stronger, tougher ethics laws for legislators, for governors, for local officials. We need that in Illinois. Just since J.B. Pritzker got elected governor, I think 10 or 11 legislators have been convicted of felonies in Illinois. And I think we need to clean things up, and having an ethics initiative where the people call the shots, where the people of Illinois, by their own petition and referendum votes, can have much stronger ethics standards than we've had up to now.
Now, as someone who's been there, I mean, you know, you have to punch through this thicket of political alliances and interest groups and donors and friends and enemies to get everybody on board with that. And unless there's some sort of populist uprising that upends all of that, that's a really difficult feat to pull off.
Well, I have done a constitutional amendment. I led it in 1980. We wanted to reduce the size of the Illinois legislature. It had 177 members in the House. We wanted to reduce its size because the legislature had passed a huge pay raise, 40% pay raise for themselves, after the election, after they promised they wouldn't do it. So we went out and got signatures on a petition. We put the cutback amendment on the ballot to reduce the size of the Illinois House from 177 to 118 members. The people voted for it by a 2-to-1 margin. And so it can be done. That's why I like referendums. Sometimes the only way to get real reform is to kind of go around the insiders and the donors and all the people you talk about. Everyday people banding together for a common cause, they can get the job done. And I've been doing that ever since I've been in public life. I believe in the power of petition, and I think I'm the number one autograph seeker in Illinois. So a friend of mine, I had dinner with him last night. He counted it out. I've been involved in petition drives that collected more than 4 million signatures for causes in Illinois, like the Citizen Utility Board or the Cutback Amendment. So we got to get that coming up here in Illinois. I really hope the governor and the legislature realize that right now our tax system needs reform. We need to reduce property taxes. And last year I campaigned for an advisory referendum called the Millionaire Amendment, saying that those who make $1 million or more a year should pay a surcharge in their income tax in order to reduce the property taxes of families and businesses in Illinois. They did this in Massachusetts by referendum. We need to do that in Illinois.
It's interesting talking about how the political geography of Illinois has changed. And it kind of happened during the two electoral cycles in which you ran for governor. I mean, you had the you were sailing into the wind of two very difficult cycles for Democrats across the country. You were pulled over the line in 2010. You came up just short in 2014. But one big trend became very obvious, and that is just how divided politically Illinois became during that time. And it probably had nothing to do with you. It was just the overall social and political trends that were showing up all across the country. But you look back in 1998. The map that propelled George Ryan into the governor's mansion in Springfield, and you look at how much blue existed in Southern Illinois. Glenn Pichard was a very strong Southern Illinois candidate as a Democrat, and so many well-known Illinois politicians were downstate Democrats. Paul Simon, Dick Durbin. And that doesn't exist anymore. Now it's a very Republican and conservative downstate. And it's the Chicago area that carries the freight exclusively for the Democratic Party. And with that level of divide that exists, can you have that type of referenda and actually pull people together when it seems like everybody wants to really commit to a team?
Well, I think that's the great thing about referendum. It does bring together people who may not always vote the same on candidates, but they believe in a particular issue, like, say, raising the minimum wage. Those kind of referendums have passed in blue states as well as red states. Decent health care for everybody the same way. You know, I lived in East St. Louis and Edwardsville and downstate Illinois. I grew up in the suburbs. Right now live in Chicago on the west side. I've been living in the same house for 42 years. I think that when I travel about Illinois, because as I mentioned, I still believe in the power of petition and referendum, we need to have more of that because it'll bring people from different parts of our state together for things that we need. You know, the referendum that was on the ballot as an advisory question last November said, should we cut property taxes for everyday people, for businesses, and so on? And the way to pay for that is a surcharge on millionaires, an income tax surcharge. About 1 or 2% of the people of Illinois are lucky enough to make $1 million a year in their salary. Bless their heart. But our tax system on millionaires is one of the lowest in the whole country. So if we raise their taxes a little bit in order to give real property tax relief to folks who live from paycheck to paycheck who are trying to stay in their homes, and we haven't gotten our Cook County property tax bill yet. When they do, I'll be out there talking about getting this constitutional amendment on the ballot, a property tax relief amendment that's long overdue.
You're listening to At Issue on WBBM News Radio. We're talking to former Illinois Governor Pat Quinn. And when you go around the state and you can look at the map of where people where people voted, how they voted in last year's election in November of 2024, and you can look at all the colors and say to yourself, boy, this is a state that's hopelessly divided. And then you can go online and just look at social media for 5 seconds and, boy, say, oh, my goodness, this state really is hopelessly divided. And then when you go out and actually talk to people, what story do they tell?
Well, you know, I led a petition drive to get term limits on the mayor of Chicago. We had to get signatures for that. And I went to Millennium Park, which draws people from Chicago, the suburbs, all over, you know, before the movies and the concerts. And I had my clipboard. I got a lot of signatures, and I talked with my fellow petition passers to lots of different people. And I think that does kind of remind people what democracy is all about. It's not the big shots calling all the shots for themselves. It's we, the people, banding together for causes we believe in. I mentioned earlier the ethics initiative. How are we going to clean up state politics and local politics? I think we need to have the power of full-fledged referendum and petition initiative so that we can do that. Same way with reforming the tax system. Another one is the utilities. ComEd, you know, this summer has been very, very difficult on people. Nicor trying to get a huge increase in their rates. So we have to have a way for the average person to work by just getting signatures on a petition, but adding that up with their neighbors to really make a difference and make our state a better place.
We've talked about gerrymandering and efforts to end gerrymandering on this program and elsewhere. And that seems like an issue that will one day be ended by the Supreme Court if they want to. No one's going to unilaterally disarm in any state in this country, seeing as that now 18-year-olds can tell you about congressional districts because we just had this level of knowledge available to us. But that also seems like something that can go a long way towards accomplishing what you want to accomplish, and that is having the voters choose their politicians and not the other way around.
Well, that's very important. I think we saw this summer where Texas tried to, five districts, congressional districts, try and make them more Republican. That's what the governor and the president of the United States wanted. No, that's not healthy. That's not what democracy is. I'm reading a book now called The British Are Coming. It's about the beginning of our country in 1776. We're going to have the anniversary of our country, 250 years of Americans telling King George to take a hike. And we got to always remember that kind of passion and spirit that the people who started our country have and what we should have today. So I hope between now and July 4th next year, we can do some petition drives. I'm working with a young fellow in Oak Park. They want to get a process in Oak Park, their village, where people can petition ideas for ordinances and then vote on them. They had an advisory question on this. 85% of the people voted yes, and we need this in all the suburbs, and including the city of Chicago, so that people have a bigger voice. That's the big issue, I think, for lots of folks who work jobs and raise kids. They want to make sure that their voice is really listened to, and petition passing referendum is certainly part of that mission.
Let's say all of this ends. Let's say this political era has come to an end, and you want to plot a course going forward from this political era. What would you do?
Well, what I would do for sure is have stronger powers of petition and referendum. I think I've said that a few times along the way of this show.
That's a running theme of this program.
So. Yeah, but that's what strengthens everyday voters. You know, I signed a bill to allow voters to register to vote on Election Day. I lost the election in 2014, but there was a fellow named Dakota McGee who waited and stayed in line until 2 a.m. in the morning so he could register and vote in that election. And I read about him in the paper, and I took him out to dinner afterwards. I saluted him. I said, gee, what a guy. You know, he believes in the power of everyday people banding together and working together. Everybody has a voice, and we need more of that. More Dakota McGee's. But I also for example, groups like the Citizen Utility Board. I'd like to see a consumer insurance board to take on unfair practices with car insurance and home insurance. These are groups that are not government groups, but they're run by consumers, funded by consumers. And CUB, the group I helped start in 1982, We got it on the ballot here in Chicago, and the people voted for it. It's been around over 40 years. And so these are groups that can last a long time and deal with affordability issues, whether it's your utility rates, your insurance rates, unfair taxes. That's what I think the politics has to focus on, affordability for people who want to raise their kids, work their jobs. A lot of their kids may go to the military, you know, and I went to over 300 military funerals when I was lieutenant governor and governor, and these are men and women from Illinois who gave their life for democracy, and we should never, ever forget their purposeful lives.
Former Governor Pat Quinn, thanks for joining us this week on At Issue. If you want to hear this program again, you can listen at WBBMNewsRadio.com, the Odyssey app, and the iHeartRadio app. Please join us next week on At Issue when we talk about Chicago's hidden history with historian Sherman Dilla Thomas. Until then, I'm Rob Hart, News Radio 105.9 WBBM.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.